KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Daly City.
Glenmore in Fremont.
I live in Oakland, California. How you doing?
Coming up, we'll visit the volunteers who help the smallest babies meet the world.
I'm especially interested in, I call it cuddling the work of the heart.
A visit to a neonatal intensive care unit. Then we'll hear from an artist who's helped fill San Francisco with murals.
It wasn't hard for me to imagine or even to think big because I always painted very big. And what I liked about it was that it was for the people.
And we'll hear what it's like when you combine Oakland's politics with classic soul and hip hop.
I think it's important for people to be able to groove to what is being said as well.
Get your groove on. It's Cross Currents. Stay with us. The Golden State Warriors completed their title run last night in Oakland. We sent reporters to Oracle Arena and all around the Bay to document the moment. Here's what they brought back.
That game was insane. The second half was so stressful, and then when the final buzzer sounded, it was just a release of all that emotion. I was so happy, on top of the world.
There's no energy like the Oracle, especially during like a must-win game. And it was just really beautiful to see. And the Warriors kept it hella intense the whole time. But the Cavs fought, and I respect that. But there's just too much firepower with the Warriors. You know, it's celebration time, bro. East Oakland gets crazy whenever the Warriors win like this.
Warriors! Dead! Warriors! Dead!
Words can't even describe it. Like, best thing I've ever been to. The atmosphere was crazy. Everyone was screaming on your feet the whole time. Like, we've been season ticket holders this whole season. Paid off 100% for tonight. Like, best night of my life.
Thanks to Jesse Rhodes, James Rollins, and Corinne Smith for recording last night. The Warriors' victory parade is scheduled for Thursday morning with a rally along the south side of Lake Merritt shortly after noon. Clearly, the Warriors are very famous figures. Here at Cross Currents, we're also interested in celebrating difference makers who usually don't get as much attention. We wanted to hear from you about your local heroes so we can tell stories about them. Here's one of our recent calls.
Hi, this is Paul Watsky of San Francisco. I'm calling with a recommendation for your Local Heroes program. It's about the Stanford Hospital Neonatal Intensive Care Unit, where volunteers come in and hold babies who would otherwise have to spend all their time in incubators until they were well enough to leave the hospital. In my mind, those are local heroes, and it would be great if you gave them some recognition. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the tip, Paul. We sent KLW's Nicole Grigg to Stanford Hospital's Neonative Intensive Care Unit, or the NICU, to learn more.
The NICU is a daunting place. It's filled with massive equipment, doctors, nurses, worried parents, and fragile newborn babies. I mean very fragile. It's a unique space where science and the spirit connect and heal.
We can take babies that are just considered viable, which is 23 to 24 weeks gestation.
Maureen Roberts is a NICU nurse at Stanford Children's Hospital.
We can take care of babies before and after cardiac surgery. We take care of babies that are getting peritoneal dialysis.
For dozens of newborns, this space is home temporarily, but their parents can't always be there to hold and comfort them. That's when a group of trained volunteers fill in with an extra set of hands. They are called cuddlers.
The cuddler program is so great because we all want to see our babies have positive touch and more stimulation and get held more. And it's so nice for us to have the cuddlers come and hold our babies.
People will look at you because we wear blue smocks and they'll say, oh my gosh, I'm so happy to see you. We have a baby for you.
That's Claire Fitzgerald. She and her husband, Pat Rice, have been cuddlers for about 20 years.
I call it cuddling the work of the heart.
Stanford Children's Hospital has dozens of cuddler volunteers. Pat is one of very few men who are part of the program. He's known around the NICU for his deep voice and gentle demeanor.
My affect when I sit down to cuddle a baby creates kind of an energy field around the baby and in the environment that we're sitting in. And if I'm irritated, agitated, strained, upset, that's what I'm bringing affectively and emotionally to the baby.
Pat almost has this baritone-like voice, and with the sound of his voice, you know his chest has to be vibrating with the music that comes out of his vocal cords, and he can put any baby to sleep. They just turn to jello.
When you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Make no mistake, though, the NICU can be a very stressful place. Some of the kids don't survive. Nurse Maureen says the medical staff and the cuddlers have to navigate through this tough circumstance as well.
Yes, no one should die alone, especially not a baby. It's so important for that baby to be loved and held and supported in those last days of life. I'm always so proud of our cuddlers who don't have a medical background that are so brave. They hold those babies and they comfort those babies. And I've never once had a cuddler say, I can't do this.
It's really hard. That's where I held this beautiful baby, and the nurse asked me to do that because they were having a care conference with the parents and they were going to take off life support. The thing that I guess my reaction to that, too, other than the tears, is I'm really happy that I could give that child comfort for that short period of time.
So what is it like as a parent to have a stranger who's not a medical professional holding and comforting your child? Shay McClendon is a mom. She and her husband, David, have a 6-year-old girl named Laurel and 3-year-old twins, Oliver and Sky. All of their kids were born prematurely, so the family has spent many, many hours in the Stanford NICU and with the cuddlers. In fact, one child is still on a ventilator and needs round-the-clock at-home medical care. Shay plays with Sky in her family room, and she talks about her first cuddler experience. It was with Pat.
My heart stopped. It was just the, I guess it's Mother Bear coming out, you know, in full force. It was the most awful thing, seeing someone there holding your child. And I didn't know about the cuddler program at this time. But I had to talk to myself for a few seconds while I stood behind him, like, you know, trying to calm myself down, like, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. And then he turned around and he saw me and he kind of calmed me down. He says, you know, is this okay? I'm holding your child. I'm just comforting her. And I realized I was being silly. And I said, it's absolutely fine. And from that moment, it was okay.
Shay and David stress that despite the difficult journey through the NICU for years, their family story is a story of joy. And the cuddlers who nurtured their babies have a lot to do with that.
You know, they actually nurture the whole family, not just your baby. It's you as well.
Shay says once her kids get older, she wants to be a cuddler too. And that's exactly the thought that Claire and Pat had decades ago.
I had a child in the hospital many years ago, and they thought he had a brain tumor. Fortunately, he didn't, but I was one of these worried moms, and I said, when my hair turns gray, I'll come back and say thank you, because I thought that was a great way to give back to the community.
The sky is always blue, but when you're crying...
The cuddler program at Stanford Children's Hospital has been around for more than 20 years, and it's still going strong. And it will continue to, so long as there are people like Pat and Claire and Shay who want to pay it back and pay it forward.
The whole world, it smiles with you.
In the South Bay, I'm Nicole Grigg for Cross Currents.
That story was inspired by a call from listener Paul Watsky, who recommended the Cuddlers as local heroes. Do you have people whose good work should be recognized here in the Bay Area? Give us a call and tell us about them. The number is 415-264-7106 and leave a message. Again, that number is 415-264-7106. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanna Baba. Now, we're going to meet a woman who's known as a local hero to many in San Francisco. 40 years ago, Susan Cervantes, along with her husband Luis, founded Presida Eyes Muralists in the city's Mission District. These days, it's impossible to walk around the Mission without running into a mural, each one more beautiful than the next. But that wasn't always the case. Originally inspired by the Mujeres Muralistas, a pioneering women's muralist collective based in the neighborhood, Susan and Presida Eyes have helped create more than 400 murals throughout the city and beyond. Susan Cervantes spoke with KALW's Jen Sheehan about the organization's history and what the murals mean for the community and for her.
Can we go back in time a bit? So before the 70s, before you were here in the Mission, when did you first, you yourself, know what a mural was, and how did you come to the art form?
When I went to the Art Institute, and the Diego Rivera mural was draped. We went there in 1960. And it was draped.
And it was covered up?
It was completely covered up.
And it was covered up because it was out of style?
Because in the 50s, the president of the school decided to cover it up because it wasn't modern enough.
Very interesting.
You know, and it wasn't until, like, I think 1990 that they uncovered it. And I think, and had Diego Rivera's apprentices restore it. And so it was from that I had some idea what a mural was. Mexican Americans in the Mission District became very inspired by their great Mexican muralists and from their own ancient culture. And it was the whole thing at that time was to go back to your roots, find out where you came from and start from there. Don't let other people tell you who you are. You know, you have something very unique and special about your own, where you come from. And I think that that's what started the movement in the Mission. And so you started to see it grow.
I'm wondering, when you founded the organization in 1977, it sounds like it was a real spontaneous kind of thing that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Did you think to the future? Did you have any idea that you'd be still doing this as Presida Eyes in 40 years?
No, not at all. I could never have imagined it. I didn't have a business plan or anything like that. It just was very organic. And basically, my involvement was really starting with the family, you know, and finding things for my children. What is there for children to do in the neighborhood? And there wasn't any arts programming in the community center. There wasn't any in the schools. So I felt that there was a need. It wasn't hard for me to imagine or even to think big because I always painted very big. And so what I liked about it was that it was for the people. That, because there was something that sort of turned me off about galleries and museums to a certain degree because not everyone could afford to participate in them. So that meant something. That meant a lot to me too. Is that it was really
it's accessible.
Mm-hmm. It's on the street and the materials that we were using it was the first time in painting history that you could use materials outside, and anyone could paint. You didn't even have to have any experience to do it.
Just pick up the brush.
Yes, and so it made it really accessible for community groups to come and participate in the process and actually paint their own murals.
It seems like you've been doing a lot of things project by project or learning things project by project over the years. I'm sure by now you have a lot of, you can plan more ahead of time based on your experience, but wondering what are some lessons that you've learned along the way, having had it happen, as you say, more naturally or more organically? What have you learned along the way about making things happen?
Well, I think that one of the reasons it's successful is because I'm in my own neighborhood. It's where people see you every day. The places that you go and patronize, you know, the stores or the cafes or the, you know, butcher shop or whatever it might be in your neighborhood, and they see you, and they're the ones that are going to support you in whatever endeavors you dream up. I have the feeling that it's best if it comes as a request. Everything that we've done over the 40 years has been by request. We haven't initiated any projects. I get calls every day asking if we can do murals in schools, hospitals, community centers, wherever it might be.
And is that to you about responding to community needs rather than advance thinking that you might know what the community needs in advance?
Yeah, I don't want to assume. I think that there's some, I don't know, I don't want to assume what the community needs. And I find that through the practice that they really, really appreciate, you know, you're listening to them and giving them a voice and ownership of the work. And if you just go into a neighborhood just cold and you want to put up something that's your own, you're not going to get the support you just won't get the support and people won't see you.
That was Susan Cervantes, co-founder of Presida Eyes Muralis, which is celebrating its 40th anniversary this year. She spoke with KALW's Jen Chien. This Saturday, Presida Eyes holds its first ever Street Art in Cinema Film Festival. That's at the Grand Theater in San Francisco. You can also join Susan on a special anniversary mural history tour around the Mission. All that information is at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Now we'll turn from visual artistry to audio. Oakland is home to a thriving music scene reflecting its character, its culture, and roots. The city has hosted many political movements, too, from the Black Panthers to Occupy to recent Black Lives Matter protests. And where there's activism, there's song. In this episode of Bay Area Beats, we meet the members of Antique Naked Soul, an Oakland band with a message that makes you move.
Ooh la la la, Antique's on the mic and she's doing her thing. Ooh la la la, it's the natural vibe that the Naked Soul bring. Ooh la 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 la, we swing.
You know you never heard this before.
So I am Antique, and we are Antique Naked Soul. We are an all-vocal, beatboxing soul band.
So my name is Nigala McCoy, and I am on background vocals. I support.
My name is Jamie Brown. I am also on background vocals, and I'm also the music director.
Tommy Solati Shepherd. I do some of the bass lines and all the percussion.
So all the sounds that you hear are sounds that we're making with our voices only, and we do live looping on stage when we're building beats on stage during our performances.
Looping is a thing where you can record your voice. You can determine how long you want your voice to be recorded, And when you stop that, your voice starts over again with what you recorded, and it comes back around again and again and again. Now, every time it comes back around, you're able to record something else on top of that. That way you can build up full chords of music, or you can build up full drum sets of things, or full soundscapes of environments and things like that.
We can also do vocal sort of impressions of instruments. We kind of simulate the sound of a band with just our voices alone.
See, support. Support.
It's kind of an illusion. We're not really trying to sound like these instruments. We're just placing notes where these instruments would be playing.
Right.
And you get it, and you wind up being fooled too.
A lot of people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Actually.
I think somebody had asked Jamie, do you have the number to your drummer?
Yes.
Can I get it? We were like, that's not drums, actually.
Yep. Just Tommy.
Just Tommy.
I can tell you right now, like the first thing I ever tried to beatbox, and I'll never forget it, was the Oscar Mayer Wiener commercial. It was like, and you know the rest thus far. So I was doing that, and then I was doing like TV show themes like Gilligan's Island and like and Hawaii Five-O and stuff like that, you know, just trying to, you know, like just trying to do that.
Part of what I think makes Antique Naked Soul so unique is that a lot of us, like three, four, we're all educators. We feel like we really understand the power of music, even just the scientific power of what it does for us and our brains and our mood and our emotions, and that and we can change the world with it. Also, just the preservation of culture. Hip hop has gotten so much more focused on just rap, and it's so much more than that. And so being able to make sure that beatboxing is an art form that stays center is important to us too. Everywhere I've been in the world, hip hop has been like a catalyst, you know. It's been empowering to people in Cuba and Honduras and in Africa and all over the world. So there's something about it that's really special.
Look, I'm a force, better move out, fall back, take cover anywhere you can, evade all that syntax, fire that, stop and frisk motions, the chemical catapulting explosions, my hoodies on my hoof for real, finna boy trying to build and rebuild, what you saying to the soil now, who's with me, who I'm up against, who fucking up to Remy Khan on the lines of defense?
We won't march, we won't chant, we won't stand for your benign neglect.
We ain't taking it, we ain't taking no more, we ain't taking that.
We won't turn the other cheek,
come on.
'Cause what we seek is equality. Nah.
So that song was called Burn, and it was written as a part of actually a theater piece that was inspired by Jeff Chang's book Can't Stop, Won't Stop. Based on what was going on nationally in the news, what was going on in Ferguson, what was going on in Baltimore, and really all over the country, Florida, Oakland, everywhere, knowing that there's been, you know, almost 400 police murders this year, and that we felt like we had to respond to that and say something about that.
No more death for the fires.
It's a lot of things, actually,
yeah.
to be honest, and I know we all feel it. We feel like so connected, but we also feel like we're preaching to a choir, like a very loud choir, but you know, it's still, we preach it to the choir.
See, the pretense is we don't want a home, in fact, we neglect the brimming joy, we love the thousand that are about to detect. If we don't see it in our eyes, I see it in our protest. If they don't hear it, then the worst one understand the process of progress. We need water, Babylon is burning, it's broken glass, smoke and pee. Everywhere we're turning, we're God, no regret, no regret, no we're learning, no we're machine knowledge, watch your back, we emerging.
Poverty is cruel. You don't care, forget humanity.
people get it. They get the song. They know exactly why it's being sang. They understand the words and they believe it themselves.
Any consequence? No. So give me an apocalypse, and I would dance,
and I would dance, yeah.
'Cause I keep democracy. It's the last chance.
I think something that music in general can do is, I mean, we could just be at a podium just shouting the messages that we have. We could just be, you know, just be preachers saying all of the messages that we have in our music. But I think it's important for people to be able to groove to what is being said as well, because it gets ingrained in you subconsciously, because you're feeling it in your body, you're feeling it not just what's being said, but movement to it as well. And then emotionally, you're able to latch onto what's being said, because it's speaking to you in a way that is more than just words alone.
Clouds are pitch black, smoke beginning to strangle. Oh, say, huh, can't you see the stars, mango? Global warming's about to take its turn on the planet, and damn it, ain't nobody even concerned. We seem too intent to holding on to what we learn. Living in oblivion, obviously, we never learn. We can have it all, y'all, only if we have the nerve. Operation demolition round the curve, let the spur, ready to burn.
That piece was produced by Julie Kane. Antique Naked Soul will be the house band at the next Kamau Right Now show presented by KALW. It's this Thursday night at the New Parish in Oakland. Check it out and find all the details at KALW.org. Our team includes China Armstrong, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Marina Poole, Stephen Short, Leela Day, Judy Silber, Corinne Smith, Claire Strempel, Beatrice Thomas, and Liza Veal. The show was engineered by James Rollins, and the line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Jen Sheehan is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.